We are in the KPBX studio, which is also always where we like to be on Tuesdays at 11 o'clock. We have a piano bench, which might be the piano composer and tenor bench today, as we're going to be presenting a little bit of music in our studio. And as always, the piano bench gets support from Dan the Piano Man, providing piano moving, tuning, and storage with new and used pianos available in their warehouse and in their virtual showroom at danthepianoman.com. Also, Lee in the Northwest Chapter of the Piano Technician Guild, an international organization providing certification and continuing education for piano technicians. One of the people that we've gotten to know in recent years is, he's been here for 5 or 6 years, something like that, is the voice teacher and tenor singer at Whitworth University. And so Scott Miller, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Fern.
And so let's describe this person that we're about to introduce and start introducing him.
How do you
know Christopher Staniter?
I know Christopher from when we taught on the faculty together at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and sang with him there when he was director of orchestral activities, and discovered during that time that he was a composer, and we became good friends, and I really became the beneficiary of him being composers. I've been lucky to know him because I get to sing some things that he's written.
Right, and we're going to get to the song cycle he's written. So, good morning, Christopher. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. I feel sort of the same way. I feel I'm the beneficiary of his performance.
Sure. But you're not in some strange town that you've never seen before right now.
No, this is very familiar to me, especially when I came off the highway and saw the Dick's Drive-In, and
yeah. So obviously, you know Dick's Drive-In. You grew
downtown
up in Spokane. You were a kid
in
Spokane.
Yes, I did.
And as a kid in Spokane, what were you? Were you a total music geek, or what?
That describes me pretty well.
Yeah.
So, and I just was very blessed to have a family that really wanted me to go into music and study music, and took piano lessons. And I also had the joy of getting to have my first orchestral experiences playing in the Spokane Youth Orchestra. At the time, it was the Spokane Junior Symphony,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
As an orchestral pianist?
Well, no. First playing horn, and then later on, I picked up the viola.
Viola. Mm-hmm. Well, that's all good training for all the multitasking conductors need to do, and so that's great. And then here you are as composer, too, and so I think we'll kind of get into this piece. As a composer writing a song cycle, I guess the first thing is to figure out what the text is, right? What you want to do?
That's correct.
And yes. So what led you to Edgar Allan Poe?
Well, a number of things led me to Poe. For one thing, I am very well aware of the great works of literature that have been written using American literature, American poetry. Mm-hmm. And for example, the Copland songs and the Dickinson settings that he's done so beautifully. And I was sort of fascinated by the fact that no one has set Poe, and thought that would be an interesting and fun setting for me, something that I could relate to on some sort of twisted level. So mm-hmm. That was the thing that attracted me to the poetry. And also the fact that he lived in the 19th century, I kind of have this flair and love for the romantic language. And so I thought that'd be a fun, another fun sort of connection for me as well.
And so once you kind of are attracted by Poe, and it's easy to be attracted by Poe, does he throw any roadblocks in the way? What sort of musicality is or isn't there in Poe's language, for instance?
Well, I have to say that I immediately discovered why Copland or some of the great composers like that never set Poe, because he has this very difficult sense of rhythm. He uses a trochaic meter in the Raven, for example, which makes it very difficult sometimes to find out how do you find a meter or a pulse here and there. And so I had to toy around for a long time with some of the text to try to figure out the best setting. Scott was extremely helpful. I came out in the summer of 2009, and we spent a week, and he just sang through all of my efforts, and he said, mm-hmm. Maybe here you might want to consider a different rhythm, or even recently we found one place where we could we could elongate some of the phrases and make it more effective that way.
Yeah, because what back to Scott here, what about the singability, the musicality? Because we all know of a kind of setting of music, and certainly in some contemporary opera, where it doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel like a song you would want to sing, or you couldn't even describe it as a song. How do you fit into this conversation?
Well, I think this is an interesting cycle in that it, because of the nature of the story and everything, and the guy, well, you have to decide for yourself whether he's crazy or whether this is a dream, but there's a wide range of emotion here, and it's, at times, I think it is. I think it does approach being operatic more than song. Mm-hmm. The things that we discussed together, and which was good for me, were things like tessitura and things like that, mm-hmm. And also things like, you know, not just the high tessitura but the low tessitura, mm-hmm. as well. And I think Christopher's going to be orchestrating it, so that'll be interesting too. I think when you hear it, you'll hear that it's pretty orchestral sounding, at least to me. Yeah.
That's typically how I approach things.
Well, so let's get a little. This is The Raven, which is what, a 25-minute song cycle or something like that.
Correct.
And in a little bit, we're going to hear a little piece of this, but let's get inside it. You're sitting at the piano, and mm-hmm. so what is there? Give an example, maybe of something, of how you set something or an idea you had or something.
Okay. Well, the approach I took to this was very cyclical, as I mentioned before. And I tried to, as I would compose different themes, I would develop those, go back to those sketches that I had and think, well, maybe I could use this again in different places. And so the opening theme, the most famous line, "Once upon a midnight dreary," that opens up with a narrator's line. So, and I don't make any apologies that there's a little bit of a similar relationship to Berlioz and that kind of rising line and then the lack of satisfaction coming back down. So, and you'll hear that in the series for those people who come to the concert on Thursday, they'll hear that phrase occurs in almost every one of the movements as well.
So that becomes a thing that holds it
sort
together,
of a leitmotif.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, yeah, since we're talking about opera.
Yeah.
And that's closely related to the Raven's melody. The Raven, if you recall, in the poem, in the first three stanzas or so, there's no mention of the Raven. It sort of emerges out of the texture. So I used that same theme. Outlining a minor triad and minor seventh to highlight the Raven when he first appears, or she, we don't know. Wow. It's gender neutral. in the second movement of this cycle as well. So another theme that I use frequently, you'll hear it in our performance today, is "Nevermore," always spoken at the end of each
line. The big
line
from the poem.
And that's just simply,
sure.
"Nevermore." And that became a very good and very useful device for me, that I could just use that always in the background, even if it's not in Poe's poem. You know, it's always as Scott's singing the different text lines. So, and then a movement that we won't play today, but one of my favorites is at the very end, where he sort of like just falls off the edge in the poem, I call this a madness theme. This tritone separation of a tritone and sort of pushing forward throughout the end as he's.
You've got a couple borrowed two things in there too, the Balm and Gilead and.
Oh right.
And the mm-hmm. Don't you have the what's the
I use a cherubicium because in the I can go through this pretty quickly. I use several tunes. I don't apologize for this. I used to, as a composition student, I borrowed this, I borrowed that.
Yeah.
Now I just figured out these are the things I really like, and
yeah.
that's what I enjoy. This is a famous melody. The Dies Irae, sure. I use throughout. That my homage to Rachmaninoff and Berlioz and everyone else who mm-hmm. love that dark Gothic character. The Cherubic hymn that Scott was talking about. That actually comes from the Orthodox Church tradition, specifically Carpatho-Rusyn tradition. And because he says in his text, he says, "Perfume from an unseen censer swung by seraphim." You almost get this sense like there's something evil and liturgical that's going on. And so I wanted to quote that as well into the music. And
nice.
I just went wild with it.
Yeah, well, that gives us a nice sense of what you did with this incredible poem, The Raven. And we're about to hear one of the central movements. This is what part of the story?
This is the entrance of the Raven, mm-hmm. actually, where he finally, after hearing the tapping at the door and on the window and nothing being there, finally the Raven steps in this movement. This is the third song of five.
Okay, well, so let's hear the centerpiece of this piece, The Raven, Christopher Stenicher at the piano, who's also the composer, and Scott Miller, the tenor here. So let's hear this movement from the middle of The Raven.
Open here I flung the shutter, when with many a foot and flutter in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Raven, nevermore. Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though his answer little meaning, little relevance he bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door. Bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such name as nevermore. But the raven sitting lonely on that placid but spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing farther than he uttered, not a feather that he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered. Other friends have flown before, on the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore.
Live in our studio, we were hearing a performance of the center movement of the Raven. And if you're just joining us, then the Nevermore would have been the dead giveaway. There's no doubt what the text is, no doubt where we're going. The composer, Christopher Stenicher, born at, grew up in Spokane and at the piano, and Scott Miller, the professor of voice at Whitworth University, singing it. Wow. And so the kind of lovely insides of that, and some a song cycle like this just kind of gives you infinite possibilities, doesn't it, you, Scott, just to sing it all your life and find new things in it.
There's always new things, exactly. Yeah.
And Christopher, as you said, you're also planning on orchestrating it, too, to, to turn it into that. Nice. Well, let's talk a bit more. Oh, by the way, this will be, let's talk about the performance Thursday night at 8 o'clock at the Whitworth Music Building Recital Hall. And tell me a little bit about the way that you're presenting it there.
I've arranged for Professor of English Vic Bob to come, and he's actually going to begin the program at 8 o'clock with a lecture discussion about Poe and about this poem in particular. He teaches a course on Poe, so it worked out great. He's going to give some background information, followed immediately by the performance. The whole cycle, well, his lecture and this whole cycle will last about an hour, so it's not a long program. Mm.
So that's at Whitworth at 8 o'clock on Thursday night in the music building. Well, now let's go on a little bit more with you, Christopher, because how do you divide your life between teaching, conducting, and composing, and specifically, how do you find time for composing?
And kids.
And kids, yes, the other side.
Composition for me has always been sort of like breathing or eating. It's something I have to do when it happens. And I'm very blessed and lucky to have these other outlets, especially the orchestral one, because that gives me an insight into the greatest composers and in their minds. We have this kind of kinship. As a conductor, also, you understand this. So when you're looking at these scores, things will come to mind, and I could do this, and that, I'll go and jot down an idea. But quite frankly, my composition is relegated to the summer, so there's the precedent for that with a lot of different conductor composers.
Yeah, just like Gustav Mahler, you have your special little summer house, and you go off and hide.
I've been looking for that, but I can't find it. Although my daughter does have this little hut or a little playhouse out in the backyard, so I've thought about moving out there in the summers.
kicking your daughter out. Perfect.
Yes.
Well, let's move to one of your compositions, because you've written some choral music.
Yes, I've been writing a lot of choral music, especially for the choir that is at the school where I teach, Augustana College.
Augustana College, sure. I mean, you can't teach at a Lutheran school without writing choral music, right?
Yeah, and that's was the attraction for me, is that there is such a great choral tradition.
Sure.
Past October, the Augustana Choir, celebrated the retirement of a longtime conductor of that group, James Johnson, and the choir is currently being conducted by Weston Noble,
the legendary
Weston Noble.
How old is he? 95.
He's 89, going on 19.
Wow,
he's quite amazing. Yeah. So very sprightly and a lot of fun.
And so, what's this piece that we're about to hear?
This is a setting of a text from the Gospel of John, and this is for a mixed choir with a soprano solo.
Okay, so a composition by my guest Christopher Stenicher, taken from YouTube in case there's an occasional strange sound. So let's hear his composition.
Thank you.
piece by my guest, Christopher Stanichar, with the Augustana Choir, conducted by, I'm going blank on his name.
Weston Noble,
yeah, one of the real legends of choral music. So there you are teaching at Augustana College, which you conduct the orchestra and teach whatever classes they need you to, and just
exactly.
The busy faculty member, and then you conduct the orchestra for them.
Yes.
And then in addition to that, you conduct the South Dakota Youth Orchestra.
Yes,
right?
That worked out really well. The time that I came to South Dakota to take this position at Augustana College, Maestro Geyer, the director of the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra, invited me and asked me if I'd be interested in taking over the new youth orchestra program that they were starting with the symphony, and that's been a real treat. It's been amazing and kind of fun. I don't know if you experienced this, but watching recent alumni already as they go into music schools around the United States.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of feel like a proud papa almost.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, with these amazing kids doing all kinds of cool things like that. Well, let's talk a little bit more about your composition, because we have this this piece, Sunflowers. Now, in writing for an orchestra, I guess that would also be a virtue of having a college orchestra and a youth orchestra around, because a lot of composers can never get an orchestra to play their stuff.
Well, I do try to avoid it, but I will always run things up a flagpole if I decide I want to have something mm-hmm. performed. That's been kind of the joy of doing recent vocal and choral works, because those aren't my ensembles per se. Mm-hmm. And so it seems a little bit less nepotistic that way. But the insight that I get from conducting a great composition, a work by Mahler or Shostakovich or mm-hmm. Strauss is the insight into how the orchestra works, and that definitely informs my composition. So,
mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about how it informs your composition, because this question of how to be a composer in 2012, we heard some of your language just using as you were playing the piano a little bit ago. Do you? Are you in any camps or pegged or anything, or do you simply just start writing music?
No, I'm clearly romantic. Mm-hmm. I don't, or neo-romantic, if you mm-hmm. prefer. Old romantic.
Yeah.
But it's not because I'm obstinate or that I dislike what's going on in new music. In fact, I think we live in a great time in that regard, especially as Americans. We have some of the finest composers and living amongst us today, composers like Corigliano and so many others that are just writing amazing things. And I notice that there's that tendency to really look back to the tonal language of the previous generations that was sort of forgotten among some camps in the middle of the 20th century. But I have the greatest admiration for new music and the avant-garde as well. So right. I don't write very well in it.
Yeah, so
it's not my soul.
We're about to hear one of your pieces. My guest, Christopher Stanichar, whose composition is, as we've been discussing over the last half hour and demonstrating, will be done Thursday night at 8:00 at Whitworth with Scott Miller singing. So what about this piece, Sunflowers, we're about to hear?
Oh, wow. This is actually one of my most personal compositions. I wrote it in Omaha when around the time that I first moved there, and it was commissioned by the Orchestra Omaha, which is a very fine community orchestra. And the inspiration for this came from a real horrible time in my life. Went through a divorce, basically, and I felt sort of shattered and everything. And so I was out and on a bike path and just biking along, and what I didn't realize having grown up here in the Pacific Northwest is that as you're going through the plains in September and October, the fields are full of sunflowers, these beautiful tall sunflowers, and it sort of spoke to me, and this melody came to me, and I thought, I've got to write this down and turn it into a sort of set of variations, which is what this is.
So we're going to hear Sunflowers by Christopher Stanichar, played by an orchestra from Mexico.
Yes, this is the Orquesta Juvenil del Estado de Veracruz de México. So an orchestra, this is a very fine conservatory orchestra in the state of Veracruz and in the city of Xalapa. And they play so well, and I had a great rapport with them when I've guest conducted them a few times. And they played my music as well as everybody else's music with great alacrity and ability.
Nice. Well, welcome back to your hometown, and thanks for being here, Christopher.
Thank you, Vern. It's a pleasure.
And so here is this piece, Sunflowers.